Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Here's an offer you don't want to miss. For just $3, treat yourself to a Krispy Kreme donut, like their irresistible chocolate donut with sprinkles, and an any size hot coffee or refreshing iced tea. Just three. Whether you're fueling up for the day or just taking a sweet break, this deal is for you. Price and participation may vary. Offer valid December 10th through April 30th, 2025 at participating McDonald's while supplies last. Krispy Kreme and associated trademarks used under license. Copyright 2024 KKDC. Copyright 2024 McDonald's.
Sponsored by Novo Nordisk. Hi, I'm standing in quicksand. You can't see it, but it could be true. Having MASH can often be the same way. MASH, or metabolic dysfunction-associated steatohepatitis, is a potentially life-threatening liver disease you could have without knowing, especially if you have conditions like obesity, type 2 diabetes, or high triglycerides. You don't know if I'm in quicksand, and you won't know if you're at risk for MASH without talking to your doctor. Learn more at speakliver.com.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland.
On News Talk.
When a North American possum is threatened, it famously pretends to be dead. That, of course, is where we get the phrase playing possum. But does the possum really know what it's doing? And can animals really understand the concept of death? Well, this is a subject that Susanna Monzo, a philosopher of animal minds at the National Distance Education University in Madrid, and author of Playing Possum, How Animals Understand Death, has spent some time thinking about. She joins me now. Welcome to the program, Susanna. I have to say, I have never heard this term before, so maybe you might explain what it means. What is thanatology?
Hi, well, thanks so much for having me, first of all. Thanatology is the study of death in general, and comparative thanatology specifically is the study of how other animals, non-human animals, deal with death and dying in general.
Yeah, we've heard over the last number of years these amazing stories from the field of, you know, animal researchers and field scientists giving us stories of incredible observations, like how monkeys mourn their dead, elephants and so on. Is this a fairly new field, understanding how animals understand themselves death?
Yes, it's a very recent field. So there have been reports of animals reacting to death in different ways since, I think, quite a long time ago. I mean, Darwin himself mentioned some of these stories. So it's been happening for a while. But I would say that it's been in the last 10 years or so that it has become more formally a discipline. So it's receiving more of a systematic study. And that's why we can now speak of the existence of a discipline of comparative thanatology.
So talk me through why we want to, because it's quite meta in a way, isn't it? Because we're not understanding the death of animals, but we're understanding what animals think about the death of their own animals. Why is this of interest scientifically? And what can we learn from understanding what animals think of death?
Yeah, so I get asked this question very often, and I think maybe people sometimes expect, you know, the study of animal minds to have to teach us something useful or something that can be applied to our everyday lives or something like that. I think there may be some lessons to be learned from looking at how animals understand death, but I personally think that it's a valuable pursuit in itself. I find it a very fascinating question, the question of whether animals can understand death, because we've typically thought of humans as the only animal with an understanding of mortality, right? This is, for instance, this was central in Martin Heidegger's thinking. So I think it's quite an interesting question to ask in itself, whether animals have this notion. But others also think that there's something to learn about the evolution of human behavior, the evolution of our funerary practices, for instance, that can be learned from looking at how other animals deal with death or how they behave in death-related contexts.
When we look at the animal kingdom, and we talk about cognition, we often separate animals into those who can recognize themselves, such as crows or higher order mammals like monkeys and so on, and those who can't. And I'm wondering, when it comes to death, is there a line that separates animals in a similar way, those who can recognize that an animal is dead and mourn for it, and those who just don't appear to understand that this animal is not alive anymore? What does our observation of the animal world tell us?
I think in general, these talks of talk of separating animals with lines, I think is not really in line with evolutionary thinking. And it's more, it's closer to thinking of nature as some sort of scale that has humans at the top and then the other animals ranked higher or lower depending on how similar they are to us. And I'm quite against this way of thinking, as are many biologists nowadays, because that's not really how evolution works. Animals are not directed towards a final goal that is humanity. Rather, each animal is adapted to its own environment and has the capacities that it needs to survive. And these capacities may be sometimes similar to our own in some regards, sometimes they're going to be very different. And I think this applies as well to animals learning about death. It's not like they have a final goal that they're all striving towards. So animals' concept of death can be different in different kinds of ways, responding to their own ecology, their own life history, and so on. That being said, there are at least like some differences that are of kind and not of degree. If we think about the differences in how, say, eusocial insects like ants are going to be dealing with death, because these are like cognitively quite simple animals compared to, for instance, chimpanzees, who are very cognitively complex and are going to show much more flexibility and variability in their behavior.
Talk me through the different responses that we've observed in these different animals, from ants to possums to macaques. How do animals respond to death from our observations?
Yeah, so I think we can distinguish two broad categories of animal responses to death that correspond to this difference in kind that I was mentioning before. So first, we can find stereotypical responses to death. These are responses that are innate, that are very homogeneous within a species. So you can find the same reaction regardless of which individual you're looking at. And they're adaptive, meaning that they have been selected for a reason because they're useful or functional in some way or another.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, a good example of this is the behavior of ants when they manage the presence of corpses in their colony. So ants engage in this behavior that's called necrophoresis, which consists of picking up a corpse and taking it out of the colony into the refuse pile. This presupposes a capacity to discriminate living individuals from dead ones, but it's not really mediated by any psychological process. Rather, it's more of a physiological reaction. So the ant is detecting certain chemical components that are given off by corpses, and this detection triggers this behavior. And we know that this is such a rigid automatic mechanism, because if you take some of these chemical components and you put them on a little pebble or a piece of leaf or a live ant even, the other ants are going to treat it as though it were a corpse, and they're going to pick it up and take that individual or the object out into the refuse pile.
Oh, wow. So you can almost paint anything with these chemicals and the ant will go, that's a dead thing, let's get it out.
Exactly. That's what we mean when we talk about stereotypical mechanisms. They're very automatic and rigid. But, you know, sometimes highly psychologically complex animals like us can also have some stereotypical reactions to corpses. So an example of this is what's called necrophobia, which is the aversion to corpses that we find in many animal species, including humans. So it's, you know, when you look at, for instance, a fruit that is decomposing, that's full of mold and smelly and stuff, you're going to find it disgusting and you're going to want to throw it out. You want to be as far away from it as possible. And the very idea of touching it or eating it is severely disgusting. And this is also a stereotypical reaction in us because it's, you know, it's innate. It's not something that we need to learn. It's something that is going to be present in any random human that you look at.
And this is sort of disgust with decay Which obviously, when we hear, if you come across a dead animal, it's repulsive, the smell. That's presumably just a chemical response to volatile decay chemicals that come into your nose, right?
I think it has to do with the smell. So certain chemicals, like what they're called necromones. These are like chemical components that come as a result of the decomposition process. So cadaverine and putrescine are two examples of this. And these are smells that are very powerful and like immediately smell disgusting. But it's also something that is very visually related. So humans are very visual animals, and I think this aversion can just come from the look of a corpse. I often in my slides, I use pictures of like decaying fruit or food or whatever, and just the very image is very powerful.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even need it to be there and smelling a particular way.
Yeah.
Just a certain look is enough for you to find it disgusting.
Let's talk about the possum, because this is an extraordinary animal that appears to know this disgust response and play on it for its own survival. Tell me a little bit about how this playing possum works, please.
Yeah. So for me to explain it, I need to explain the other type of a reaction that we see to death in the animal kingdom, which is what I would call a cognitive reaction, which is mediated by these psychological mechanisms, you know, and so it implies that the animal understands something about the object that it's dealing with, this corpse. And it's not just this like automatic sort of blind mechanism. Now, the opossum is a fantastic animal. I'm a huge fan. And it has this very spectacular death display that it engages in when it feels threatened. So it adopts the bodily and facial expression of a corpse. It stays very still. Its bodily functions are reduced. So its breathing and heart rate are reduced. Its body temperature drops. It opens its mouth and its tongue hangs from its mouth and turns this bluish color. And it expels this putrid smelling liquid from its anal glands.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah,
God, it really goes all in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, according to my own theory, this is a very interesting case, but not because the opossum is understanding what they're doing. So for the opossum, this is likely going to be just an automatic reaction in the same way that when we are fearful, our pupils dilate, or hair stands on end. This is not something that we can control or something that we're even aware of. And in fact, when humans feel threatened and without a possibility to escape, we go into a sort of paralysis that may be evolutionarily related to what we see in the opossum. However, the opossum's behavior is interesting, not because of what it tells us about the opossum's mind, but because of what it tells us about the minds of her predators.
Right.
So a good way of understanding this is thinking about the peacock's tail. So the peacock's tail, biologists tend to say that it gives us a window into the mind of the peahen. It shows us what the peahen finds sexy, right? Because this tail is a huge disadvantage in a lot of regards, but it has one big advantage, and it's that the peahen finds it extremely sexy. And so she's likely to want to mate with this individual that has this beautiful tail. So with the opossum, what we're seeing is something similar. The opossum has this display that for it to work, the predator that she's targeting has to be deceived by it.
Hmm.
And for the predator to be deceived by it, she has to have some understanding of death. Otherwise, the trick doesn't work, right? So the idea is the opossum plays dead. And by playing dead, maybe the predator decides not to eat her because she wants a fresher meat, or maybe she decides to stash the opossum for later consumption. And so playing dead is advantageous because it gives the opossum a chance to escape.
Yeah.
But for this to work, the predator needs to conceptualize what she's doing as, you know, this individual is dead.
Yeah. And so does that mean that that these predators have an understanding of what the difference is between life and death? I mean, when we see, for example, elephants mourning, do they understand that that animal is dead and will not be coming back? Or is that anthropomorphization?
I think that the question of mourning is a different question from what the question of whether animals can understand death. Mourning is a reaction, an emotional process that arises from the loss of a loved one. And so when you lose someone that you love, you go into this grieving process, but you need not understand that this individual has died for you to go into this process. In fact, this individual doesn't even need to have died for you to experience grief. So think about, having someone that you really love move to a different country, or, you know, some people go through a grieving process after a breakup.
Yeah, but that was not really grief, though, is it?
Well, it depends on the definition that you want to give off grief. But it's, you know, if you think of grief as what Barbara King calls it, the other side of the coin to love, when you lose someone that you love in different kinds of ways, you go through this grieving process, which is the process of adapting to a life without that person.
Right.
And so the person doesn't need to have died, or even if they have died, you don't need to understand that they have died. What you need to perceive is the absence of this person in your life.
Yeah. I mean, when we hear about these scenes of elephants and monkeys, you know, spending time, you know, in the presence of this corpse, it does feel like that. But actually, I wanted to ask one last question, because many people listening will be pet owners. And I'm wondering, do we have any evidence that pets grieve when their owners die? Because, you know, this is classic story of his master's voice, the dog that responded very mournfully when he heard the voice of its owner, even though the owner had passed. And then we hear stories of dogs eating their owners just an hour after they've died. I'm just wondering, do our animals that we care for, do they care about us, and do they miss us when we die?
I specifically deal with the case of companion animals who feed on their dead caregivers. And I actually argue in my book that this may be an example of grief. And we're not seeing this because we have these anthropocentric glasses on that don't allow us to see the world from the eyes of other animals. So in order to see why this is the case, it's interesting to look at how this behavior actually happens. So as you said, there's an important number of cases of companion animals, both cats and dogs, who feed on their dead caregivers. And this often happens in the first 24 hours after the owner has died, and with the animal having access to other sources of food. So it's not motivated by hunger. Now, in the case of cats, people might not find this that surprising, but certainly in the case of dogs, people are very disturbed by this thought, because we are very convinced that our dogs love us, but they seem to take the very first chance they get to actually eat us. So what's going on here? Well, dogs, we tend to think of them as companion animals, but actually about 80% of dogs are free ranging. They don't live with a human. They live out in the streets or in the wild. And when they do, they are hunters, but they are also scavengers. And when they scavenge on a corpse, what they tend to feed on is the torso, which is where all the nutrient-rich organs are.
Okay.
However,
I'm already regretting asking this question, Susanna.
Sorry. Do you want me to stop?
No, please continue, but wow.
However, when they feed on their dead caregivers, what they tend to eat is the face. And this is very interesting, because our face is our communicative center, is the part of our body that dogs pay the most attention to try to understand what we're communicating. And so the fact that what they eat is the face is super interesting, because it suggests that this behavior starts as an attempt to get a response from their owner. The owner is lying dead, and the dog is maybe nudging the owner's face, trying to get a response. Now, when dogs get frustrated, when they're nervous, the way they calm themselves down is with the mouth. If you've ever lived with a dog, you will have seen that they very often lick something obsessively if they're nervous and so on. And so they probably start doing that to their human's face. They start licking it, maybe nibbling on it. And at some point they draw blood, and then, well, one thing leads to another, right?
Right.
But What's interesting is that at the root of this behavior may precisely be their anguish at the owner's lack of response.
Right.
So it may actually be a response that stems from grief.
Well, do you know what? That is a lovely Christmassy message to end on, that actually our animals love us to death. And yes. and they are very fond of us, so fond of us, in fact, that they really will go to quite severe lengths to keep us, to wake us up once we're dead. I don't know what else to say. That is both a fascinating and horrifying conversation, Susanna, but really, really interesting research and a very interesting book as well. If you're interested in understanding how animals understand death, the book is called Playing Possum, How Animals Understand Death. The author is Susanna Monso. Susanna, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Here's an offer you don't want to miss. For just $3, treat yourself to a Krispy Kreme donut, like their irresistible chocolate donut with sprinkles, and in any size hot coffee or refreshing iced tea. Just three. Whether you're fueling up for the day or just taking a sweet break, this deal is for you. Price and participation may vary. Offer valid December 10th through April 30th, 2025 at participating McDonald's while supplies last. Krispy Kreme and associated trademarks used under license. Copyright 2024 KKDC. Copyright 2024 McDonald's.